Good morning, Club 1220 KLBB listeners. My name is Mark Armstead, and you are now listening to the Linders, well, let me repeat that, the first Linders Lawn and Garden Radio Hour. All right, so we're going to start in here today. I'm going to talk about a bunch of different topics, and we'll probably go over, first I'll intro, so you'll get to know a little bit about me and understand where I come from, and we'll talk about what we've seen so far this year, what we should be doing, and then some timely tips. So let me introduce the show to you. We're going to be talking about all things gardening, all four seasons, and this show is actually for you. So I would appreciate some interaction. Let me know what you're thinking. Let me know what I can teach you. Maybe we can learn together. So there's many ways to contact us here. You can contact us at 651-275-1220 or toll free at 877-646-1220. You can always email questions to linders@klbbradio.com. No dits, no dashes, no underscores. And you can also call me at Linders Greenhouse. And it's just basically my name at linders.com. So it's MarkArmstead at linders.com or 651-488-1927. That is a lot of information. So I will definitely repeat that throughout the show so you can kind of get a hold of me here. But basically what I'm looking for is topics that pertain to you. Some interesting things. We'll go over a whole bunch of stuff here. So let me introduce myself. My name is Mark Armstead. I've been in the garden industry for about 25 years now. And it's not something that I actually planned to do. I went to St. Cloud State for a degree in botany and a minor in evolutionary geology. And so when I got out, I actually wanted to go on and teach college somewhere. But like every good college student, you get out and the first thing you want to do is make a little money so you can earn those finer things in life like food and clothing. So I took a job in a garden center. And it was kind of ironic because I was standing there in the yard, the garden center yard, the very first day, thinking I was on top of the world. Man, I had my diploma in hand, and I was looking over things, and I thought I knew everything there was to know about plant material. And it was kind of humbling because it was on that very first day I realized how stupid I really was. And that's probably what intrigued me about the whole industry was that I found myself learning something new, brand new, every single day. So from there, I kind of moved up into a grower position, actually. My background is as a grower. I started growing potted crops. Started out with chrysanthemums, you know, the potted chrysanthemums you see at the florists. It went on to African violets, poinsettias, Easter lilies, cyclamens, primula, you name it. Well, from there, I kind of got my delve into the retail world when I moved on to a place in West St. Paul and worked for a family, the Walters family. And it was there I kind of gained my appreciation for retail. And one of the most gratifying things for me was to watch families grow up. It was amazing. Parents would bring in their kids, and I could see that amazement, that wonder in their eyes when they looked over all the color of the plants and the flowers. And then I would all of a sudden see those kids grown up bringing in their families. Well, naturally, that takes place over a 25-year period. But I really enjoyed that, and it was gratifying to me to know that the information or the advice that I was giving actually helped people in their gardening practices and made them better gardeners. So that's very humbling to me, too, that people would actually take my advice under consideration. So here we are, 25 years later, and when I mentioned I would, you know, preferred to go on into teaching, do I regret my decision? Absolutely not. I've really met some great people along the way. Some great mentors. They've taught me a lot. I'm still meeting some great people. I get to talk to gardeners and talk about gardening. How great is that? And so here we stand. Right now I'm at Linders, and I've been there for 13 years. I was working up in the garden center as grower/assistant retail manager, and now I'm into marketing for Linders. So that's enough about me. The show itself, we're going to be talking all fun things gardening, and I'd really appreciate your topics, so by all means, call into the show. Let's begin with kind of what we've seen this year. I mean, we started out with some crazy weather patterns. I mean, all through that first 3 weeks of May, it was snowing every single Monday, an accumulative snow. So what that really meant for us gardeners was that it really kind of pushed things back when it came to planting a lot of this material out there. we never really got a start until probably the third week in May. And so it really kind of set things back for the summer and really kind of set the tone and the pace for what we began to see. One of the things we noticed at the garden center was that a lot of our mature perennials were dying out. And I think it kind of leads back to last year. You know, as we look at fall of 2012, I think we went into winter and we were about maybe 17 inches down in moisture. That's a lot when you look at the groundwater moisture levels. And so what I think happened is we look at our mature perennials, they had a pretty good structured root system down deep into the soil. And with that lack of moisture, and then all of a sudden that snow in winter, and then we got to spring, I think the moisture that we did receive, and we did get a lot of it early on, but it really didn't push deep down into the soil. And so I think as we approached that time when our perennials were emerging, I think we lost a lot of our mature stuff. Some of the newer perennials that we possibly planted last year and early this year, I don't think they struggled too much because I think that surface groundwater was actually there. Another thing we noticed was that some newly planted material was coming out late. We saw things come out probably 2 and 3 weeks behind schedule. Just to give you a couple examples, the hydrangeas, endless summer hydrangea. We didn't see that thing, which usually starts to pop out about 1st of June or so. We never saw that until probably mid-June. Perennial hibiscus really came out late, too. And so, as I said, that kind of set the tone for how the summer kind of progressed. One other thing, as we look at a lot of our vegetables, we saw a lot of blossom end rot occurring in our tomatoes. And I think that kind of comes from or stems from a couple different things. One was we see an increased use in herbs and vegetables in pots, probably a 2-digit increase over the year. And there's a kind of a learning curve that kind of comes along with that because we kind of expect that as long as we water and as long as we fertilize a little bit that our plants or our herbs and vegetables are going to perform fairly well. But there's a big difference between growing herbs and vegetables in pots versus flowers. So the blossom end rot that we talked about with tomatoes, what blossom end rot really is a lack of calcium in the plant or the developing fruit itself. And it forms this kind of brown scab on the very bottom of your developing fruit. But it really kind of stems from an inconsistent watering practice. And that kind of leads to the whole calcium deficiency. So there's a couple of different ways to circumvent that. I've had people, I had a Facebook comment that said that somebody took some calcium vitamins and actually crushed them up and added them to the soil. I thought that was kind of interesting.
You mean calcium supplements like a human would take?
Exactly.
See, that's inventive. I like that.
Yeah, I got a good chuckle out of it. I thought that was just awesome. Another thing you can do is add crushed eggshells to your soil because as those break down, they do release some calcium into your soil. And definitely buy a tomato food. I mean, if this is something that you really want to do year after year, if you want to go with pots on your deck or on your patio, definitely try to get fertilizers that pertain to the crop that you're using. You can't just strictly use like a Miracle-Gro product if you're trying to grow tomatoes because tomatoes, you know, you're talking about something that you're actually eating. And so you really want good flavor. You want that plant to develop healthy. So definitely buy a tomato food for that. Another thing we saw, flowers falling off in our tomatoes. And I think that, again, stems from our whole weather pattern that we saw. I think subconsciously, as we look at tomatoes and we're trying to grow them, you know, through the summer here, we kind of get an established schedule going throughout the summer. And with everything kind of set back, I mean, a lot of our tomatoes weren't planted till later. They got off to a slow start. Finally, when it did warm up, you know, we kind of expected that fruit to be forming in July. And with that 2 to 3 week delay that we saw, I think that we expected those fruits to form. But what we saw happening was that, you know, if you look at our spring and the way flowers develop, especially on our vegetables, they have some parameters that you have to take under consideration. And one is that the night temperatures, if they're below 55 degrees or above 75 degrees, the flowers will actually kind of die and fall off. And that holds true with days above 90, too. Plants aren't, they're temperature dependent. And just like us, they kind of shut down when temperatures really get too high. And for plants, it's usually above 90 degrees or so. And they will just kind of sit there and get what's called heat delay. What actually happens with inside the flowers is that the pollen will become tacky, and so it can't be pollinated. And then, of course, the flowers just die and fall off. So I guess with that, have any questions, by all means, give us a call, 651-275-1220 or toll-free at 877-646-1220. And, of course, you can always email questions into linders@klbbradio.com. Come back, and we'll see you in about 4 minutes. Good morning and welcome back. My name is Mark Armstead, and we're talking all things gardening this hour. If you have any questions, please feel free to call us at 651-275-1220 or toll-free at 877-646-1220. So coming back from the break here, the last 10 minutes or so, we talked about what we've seen this year. And we're going to go over some things that we should be doing right now because there's a couple of important topics that we kind of have to take into consideration as we're moving into fall and winter. And I hate to say it, but we are moving into fall and winter. I actually
Don't you put that on me.
Hey, you know when I was coming up the steps, I saw some salt down on the bottom step. Is that pessimistic
no,
or what?
No, you did not. I'm just going to close my eyes and shut my ears. I'm not hearing anything.
And I was just out doing a little traveling the other day, and I did see some maple trees, you know, starting to change. That is not from the temperatures. It's not from anything else. That was from stress. But it does kind of show you that we're out kind of heading in. And with the temps this week, I mean, it doesn't show any signs of slowing. So fall, or summer is kind of hanging on here. But there are some things that we should be looking at because we always run into some problems as we kind of get into fall. And right now, subconsciously, we're in this whole summer mode, and it's tough for the back of our mind to kind of get out of that. So I guess the first thing is, the thing that bothers me the most is that we get to Labor Day, and people all of a sudden, their gardening is over. It drives me nuts. There's so much time after that we can kind of still have some fun. And the beautiful thing about this is, if we look at fall with these cool temperatures, that's what really enhances flower colors, all those cool night temperatures. So plants will actually start to look their best in the fall and kind of get this new resurgence. You know, they've come out of the stress of summertime here and just struggled. And all of a sudden we get into fall and we're kind of done on Labor Day. So by all means, keep out those hoses, continue gardening because there's still plenty of time. And when you think about it, Labor Day this year is September 2nd. From September, October into November, you're looking at almost 10 weeks of gardening that's left. And so I get a little frustrated as people start to put away their hoses and stuff. But as we look at some of the things we should be doing outside right now, there's a lot of plant material out there that I think people want to save. I mean, gardening's not cheap anymore. And so there's things like we put our house plants outside. And if you're like me, I take all of my indoor plants and I bring them outside for the summer. They just love that. And so as I look to try to bring them in this summer or this fall here, there's a couple of things that I want to look at. One is the last thing I want to do is bring bugs inside. And the other one is the watering issue. So as we look at kind of bugs, you know, as you're looking at your plants right now, you may not see any. I mean, they may look clean to you. Mother Nature does a really good job of keeping plant material clean. There's the wind, there's the rain. You have predaceous insects out there, you know, things that kind of eat other insects. And so it kind of keeps everything in check. But when you go to bring your plant material indoors, there's nothing inside that's going to do that. There's no wind. There's no rain. There's no predaceous insects inside. And so kind of the bug population goes nuts. And just to give you an example, I'll just use aphids because that's kind of my fun one. Aphids are one of those little, they're kind of like dewdrop shaped. And they love brand new tissue. So usually they're kind of hanging around on the tips of plant material. And the funny thing is with aphids, they are born pregnant. So they continue to have these live births, and in 1 month's time you can have over 1 million of these little buggers on your plant.
I guess I'm just curious about the physiology. How are they born pregnant? I mean,
they actually store semen, and I don't know the whole details of how they do that,
sure.
But it just transfers because it's live birth. They store that inside.
And so are they all technically female then, or?
That's why I love this insect so much. Yes, they are all born female. And the beautiful thing about that, when you look at the strategy of how they survive, mm-hmm. is that being born female and being born pregnant, they can just continue to produce progeny and just continue and continue and continue. All of a sudden, they'll get to a point on your plant where it becomes so overpopulated that they need to move on. They need to find another plant.
Right.
So all of a sudden, they'll start producing males.
Really?
Yep.
And so it's just evolutionarily just, boom, we need some men.
Yep, that's right. And then they'll develop these winged females and males, and they'll just fly off to another plant and then populate that until it's overpopulated and the whole cycle starts again.
Holy cow. So you really only need a single male aphid in order to create just a giant swarm of them.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Woo. Lucky aphid.
Well, and there's many other. I mean, every insect's got this strategy. Spider mites hang out on the undersides of leaves, so you really don't notice them until it's too late, and all of a sudden, boom, you've got this webbing all over your plants. Thrip. Thrip are like little sliver-type insects. They hang out in the very apex, the very tip of your leaves that are still unfolding, so you can't get at them with sprays. So insects are pretty keen little buggers, and the key is to make sure that you're trying to control them outdoors. So as we look at it, what I always do with my plant material is I kind of develop a program, and I start to think about when I'm going to bring them in. So let's say I'm going to bring them in third week in September, and we'll get into temperatures here in a second. But third week in September, what I want to do is start spraying a good 3 weeks before I'm going to bring them in. And I'm going to spray, on, let's say, one time, wait a week, spray again, wait a week, and spray again. The misconception always is that when you spray, let's say you do have a bug problem and you spray, you see them die off. I mean, most insecticides tend to be kind of a contact kind of deal. The minute they come in contact with the insect, it kills them off. And so all of a sudden you'll start to see all these insects kind of die off your plant. Well, you're typically the adults are the only ones that are susceptible to the insecticide. The eggs and the larvae are not.
Is that because they're protected by some shell or...
Webbing? Yep.
I mean,
the way the eggs are deposited, the egg casing itself, larval forms are usually kind of a stationary metamorphose kind of thing situation.
So why does the spray not penetrate that kind of protective layer, I guess? I mean, that's pretty harsh stuff.
Well, this is where what we're seeing in the industry is actually a great thing. The Department of Agriculture has really done a really good job of keeping some of the nasty chemicals off the market. And as you look at most chemicals, I can tell you that underneath your kitchen cabinet, you have worse chemicals than some of the chemicals that you purchase in a garden center. I mean, if you look in the bottom of it, like an Ajax, even toothpaste, it'll tell you caution. Now, take a look at your insecticide that you're using. Most of them will say caution. Now, I'm not saying that so that it should diminish your safety. I'm just saying that, you know, they've taken a lot of those nasties off the market that have like a long residual or attack the nerve system so that it may contact us. Most of your insecticides today are pretty specific to the insect that they're trying to kill. Hence, read the label. So anyway, getting back to our little story here is that I usually start about 3 weeks, then I'll spray once a week. And that way I ensure that that first spray that I get on there actually kills off the adult population. And then what happens is if there are any eggs and any larval, what they will do is they'll hatch into adults. And so that second week, I'm killing off that little population. So the eggs that were there have turned into larvae. And that third week, I'm killing off that one. So you kind of kill off that whole cycle. If you miss, and a lot of it is dependent on temperature, if you miss, and let's say you go on vacation for 2 weeks, you kind of have to start over again because that insect has now reproduced and kind of set down another set of eggs and larval. And
so you have to make sure you get at least, what, 3 weeks then?
Yes. Yep. And if it anything else, just kind of clean up with a force spray, depending on the insect itself. Like I said, a lot of it's temperature dependent, but if you kind of hit once a week, I mean, you're bound and determined to kind of kill off that whole population, both the eggs, larval, and adult phase. All right. Now, when it comes to temperatures, and this is where I have a hard, you know, a lot of times I don't practice what I preach when it comes to this, because if you've ever brought plants indoors, what you commonly see is that the minute you bring them inside, you tuck them away in that corner, that perfect corner, and nice in front of a nice sunny window, what's the first thing that happens? All of a sudden, you'll start to see leaves yellow, and then those leaves will drop off. It's basically what it is a transplant shock. And if you look at what we've done, we've taken all our plants, we put them outside. They love being outdoors. They love Mother Nature's natural sunlight. It's not filtered through a window. They love the rain. It washes off all the dust on the foliage, keeps everything clean. But when you go to bring them in, those plants have adjusted to our daily and nightly temperatures. And so what happens is they're used to the warm days through summer. All of a sudden we get into fall. The days are still warm, but our nights are starting to cool down. Let's say you're looking at, like today, for instance, we're looking at probably 88 degrees as the temperature climbs throughout the day here. And I think they talked about 70, mid-70s or something like that at night. Now take a look at your temperatures inside. They tend to be pretty static. Right now we're dealing with a 14-degree difference between day and night temperature. All of a sudden you bring them indoors, it's like 68. Let's say both day and night, if you're running your air conditioner, 72 maybe if you're running your air conditioner. So it stays pretty stable. Well, that's shock to the plant. And what happens is those leaves will start to fall off.
And incredibly dry, too. I mean, the dryness of the air with the air conditioning running, does that do something to them?
It definitely has an effect on plant material. And what you tend to see is you might see some leaf edge burn, tip burn on them. And people kind of struggle with that, and they always look at it. And that's where that whole subconscious thing comes in mind, because we kind of get used to watering. And our first response is, maybe it needs more water. And so you start to water more.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden it's like, nope, that's not helping. And so you kind of do the flip side. And then maybe it's too much water. And then you kind of hold back on it. And then that kind of runs into some problems. All right, so with that was a lot of information. We're going to run to a break, and we'll be back in 3. Good morning and welcome back, Club 1220 KLBB listeners. Before the break, we talked about how we're going to bring in our plant material and the thoughts behind what we're going to be doing as we bring in this plant material for the winter. But first, we have a phone call from KLBB Super Saver fame, Jeff. So, Jeff, what's your question?
Well, good morning, Mark.
Good morning to you.
I have a very small garden plot, and for years I've successfully grown zucchini in an area where I had my tomatoes. Well, this year I decided to switch it up a bit, and I planted summer squash from seed. Now, I have two very large summer squash plants that are starting to flower right now. I haven't seen any signs of any tubers yet, but it's not. It appears to be having an effect on my zucchini plant. It's been stuck at about 4 inches in height and has not started to vine out. Should I thin out the summer squash, perhaps pull one of those two large plants, or should I just give up on having zucchini this year?
Oh, boy. You say you're not getting any fruit at all at this point?
Not yet. No, just flowers. The flowers are starting to shape up, and it looks like we're going to start getting fruit soon. But everything got planted late this year.
Yes, indeed it did. I guess, if it's taken over your garden, I would definitely probably start to thin it out. If nothing more, take off or shred some of those leaves, get some air down inside there, get some light down inside there so those developing fruit can kind of go on a little faster. Unless you're dealing with a space issue, I don't know that I'd kind of yank one. But what do you mean the plant was 4 inches tall? I mean, is it stunted that badly?
I bought it from a seedling, and usually by this time of year, of course, I'm about 2 weeks behind in planting. It has vined out, but this time it's just kind of a straight stick, and it's only like 4 or 5 inches tall.
Wow!
And I'm thinking it may not have gotten enough sunlight, so I probably will start pulling out pulling a few leaves, clipping off a few leaves off the summer squash plants. But do you think there's still a chance I might get any zucchini this year?
It really depends on how fast winter approaches, and hopefully it kind of gives us some normality here. You should have enough time to get some zucchini, 1, 2, 3 possibly. I would take a look next year. Sometimes when you take seedlings like that, they can be so root-bound, especially if you're buying them late like that, that the roots kind of remain in that little root mass that you started with. And plants have kind of a real reluctancy to send roots out unless it's absolutely necessary. So let's say you got your summer squash growing and they're going like gangbusters, and you're watering your garden according to what your summer squash require. Well, your zucchini, because they're still developing, may not require that much water. And so those roots really don't have a chance to kind of look for water, so to speak. And so that might be what's doing it. So next year, probably what I'd do is when you buy those zucchini plants, maybe break up the roots a little bit, kind of break up that root mass before you plant it. That's it'd be great if I could see a picture. So if you want to email in that picture, I'd be happy to look at it and kind of give you a more definitive on it. But that's the kind of the first thing that comes to mind for me.
And when removing leaves, how many leaves, and do you recommend tearing them off or using a scissors?
I would definitely use a scissors or a nice sharp knife, and I would probably try to sterilize that. Just dip it in like a 5 or 10% bleach solution so you're not transferring any diseases once you do cut into it. And I don't think it needs that much. I mean, basically what you do is you just want to get some light and some air down inside there, and it doesn't take much at all. I mean, you know how big that foliage is, but you're going to need some of that foliage so that it can the foliage can make energy to put back into the fruit. So you don't want to take off too much.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Good luck with the show, Mark.
Well, thank you, sir. And I love the question.
Okay.
All right. So getting back to our topic about bringing in houseplants, there's a lot of things that we look at. As I mentioned, gardening can be expensive. And so there's a lot of things outdoors that we potentially want to bring inside. Maybe it's some flowering tropical plants, some mandevillas, hibiscus. Maybe you bring out your indoor plants like I do, your Chinese evergreens, your aurelias, any of the houseplants, pothos. Maybe you want to kind of have some fun bringing in some annuals. Bring in impatiens or petunias or something like that. So that's what we're talking this morning, and we're going to move on to, because Tom, who's my right-hand man in here.
Why, hello.
He brought up a great question about humidity. And so that kind of leads us into the next topic. Because as we look at outdoors, they're talking, I think I saw this morning Jonathan Juhas on Channel 5 said humidity was going to be up, or dew point was going to be up around 70. That's amazing. I mean, we're almost looking at tropical-like conditions.
It does feel like, especially when I leave this office, when you step outside, you're swimming.
Yeah, that's right. And then you gasp for a breath.
Just drinking at that point.
So, I mean, that's kind of our plants. Don't get me wrong. Our plants love that. But there's a huge difference between what happens outdoors and indoors. And as I mentioned before the break, that it's really transplant shock that our plants are grown through. It's not exactly taking a plant and repotting it that's causing the transplant shock. It's just a change in the environment. And so the first thing that plants will do is they've grown lush all summer long because they're used to that humidity, they're used to that moisture being outside. So the leaves really aren't toughened up, so to speak. And so what happens when you bring them inside, the first thing we see is that leaves will start to lose their moisture. And being, if you look at the leaf structure, leaves are more sensitive both on the tip and the outer edges. And so they tend to lose moisture at a faster pace on those regions, faster than what can be replaced. And so you might see some leaf edge burn and tips. So make sure that when you do bring your plants inside, that as you look at that, that if you see that, that's kind of what's going on. Let them ease through it. Let them do their thing. It's kind of like a temperamental child. You just kind of let them throw their tantrum, and then all of a sudden it'll stop. It'll be adjusted to what's going on indoors, and they should take off again. And at that point, you can do a couple of things. One is you can either remove the leaves, or you can actually get a little scissors and actually cut off the edges and the tips in the shape of that leaves itself. Well, right now we got a caller, Mary from Stillwater.